Okay, Rishos Rabbi Donath, welcome everybody. Welcome back to Monthly Night Beis Medrash. We're beginning our new series, going back to Inyani Diyoma, the topics related to the holidays that are upcoming. So we're going to, in our next two shiurim, discuss some of topics related to Purim, and then we'll have a longer series related to Pesach. So tonight, we have Rosh Chodesh Adar, Chodesh Tov, and the Mishenech Nes Adar Marbin B'Simcha. There's no better way to celebrate the Simcha of Adar than with the Simcha of Talmud Torah, Pikudei Hashem Yesharim, Misam Chilif. Rav Yitzchak Kohn, every year in YU, puts up a sign that says that during Adar, we should be Mischazik in our starim because of Mishenech Nes Adar Marbin B'Simcha. So we'll bring some of that sign here to Darchenam. So tonight I wanted to discuss a topic, one of my favorites when it comes to Purim, which is the relationship between two adjacent days of Tanis Esther and Purim. We're going to see tonight, I hope, we're going to elaborate and analyze the relationship between the two, and we're going to see that there really is a very intimate connection between Tanis Esther and Purim, and I hope that this will really inform and deepen our experience of Purim as a whole. So let's begin from source number one, which is the Gemara in Megillah, Daf Beis Med Aleph. Maseches Megillah begins by telling us that it used to be that villagers could read the Megillah starting from the 11th of Adar. 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. We know that for those who live in unwalled cities, we read the Megillah on the 14th. For those who live in walled cities, they read the Megillah on the 15th. And for villagers, there were specific dispensations that were made to allow them to read the Megillah even earlier in order not to inconvenience them too much. So the Gemara then goes on to try to determine how it is that we derive these days of 11, 12, and 13. 14 and 15, I know. If you read the Megillah says that in future years, we're going to read the Megillah on the 14th or on the 15th. Where do we get the 11th, 12th, and 13th from? So the Gemara has a drasha from the word zmanehem, their times, and we extrapolate that word to mean multiple times, manim tuva, multiple times, and it comes to include another 2 days. So the Gemara says, what days does it come to include? The 11th and the 12th. Uh-oh, we're missing one from the list. What happened to the middle? What happened to the 13th? So the Gemara then says, we don't need a pasuk, we don't need a verse to include the 13th as a day that's fit to read the Megillah. Why? K'da'amar Rav Shmuel bar Yitzchak, this is the last line in source number one in the bold, Shlosha asar zman kihila lakolhi velotzarech lerabuye. The 13th of Adar is a time in which everybody gathers together, and therefore it doesn't need to be included explicitly in the pasuk. Okay? So because it's a zman kihilo lakol, it's a time of gathering, so we should know misvara, we should know already on our own, just from pure logic, that the Megillah could be read on this day. What does zman kihilo lakol even mean? This is so simple, we don't even know what the words mean. So this is a debate between Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. Rashi in source number 2 explains that Zman kihila lakolhi, hakol nikhaluli hi nakeme oivehem, bein beshushan, bein beshar mekomos. If you go back into the story of Megillah Esther and you pay attention to the 9th parak, so you'll see that on the 13th of Adar, everybody, all of the Jews, regardless of where you lived, whether you were in the walled city of Shushan or in other cities, they all got together on the 13th and they fought their enemies. Kemosha kasuv basefer. Just as it's written in the Megillah. So Hilkach says Rashi, therefore, Lotzarech kra lerabuye sheyehirai lekriya. We don't need a pasuk to tell us that this day is fit for reading the Megillah. De'ikar hanis bo haya. The essence of the miracle was on that day. That was the day that they fought a war where they were completely outnumbered. They shouldn't have had a chance of winning. Nonetheless, they won. That's the miraculous day. If that's the miraculous day, so then that should be a day that we could read the Megillah. So says Rashi. However, comes along the Rosh, Rabbeinu Asher, in source number 3, and challenges Rashi's position with some very strong questions. Says the Rosh, V'lo nihira. This doesn't seem correct to me, Rashi's approach. Dinehi dinikalu bo bayom. So I understand, granted, that they gathered together on that day to fight the war. But kevan shekavu hakriya b'yodalu v'achamish alsar. Once the Jews got together and established that the Megillah should be read on the 14th and the 15th, who says that you can now read it on the 13th just because they fought a war on that day? I don't understand. And number two, va'od, De lo zman ha-milchama gorem es ha-kriya. It's not the war that cements the basis for the reading of the Megillah. What is it? El zman ha-minucha. It's the rest from the war. It's the celebration of the victory. That's the justification for reading the Megillah. Not the war itself. Kedichsiv, as the Pasuk says, kayomim ashrei nachu vohem ha-yehudim. The days on which the Jews rested. The 14th and the 15th are the resting days, not the fighting days. So I don't understand, says the Rosh Rashi. You're telling me that the 13th is such a special day because the war transpired on that day. What does that have anything to do with the Megillah? That's the Rosh's question on Rashi. So Rabbeinu Tam suggests a different interpretation of the word Zman Kihila Lakol, a day of gathering. Skip to the second paragraph in the middle of the line after the ellipses. Upirish Rabbeinu Tam Zman Kihila Lakol Hi. Shehakol misasvin litanis Esther. It doesn't mean that everybody got together to fight the war, but rather it means that we gather together to mark the fast of Esther. Ubaim b'nei hakfarim la'ayaros, all of the villagers come to the cities, and they daven together, lomar slichos v'tachanunim. They say slichos and pleas and supplications, l'fi shebo nikhalu labo na'nafsham v'hayu tzrichim rachamim. In the days of Mordechai and Esther, so the 13th was a day in which they needed a lot of help, they needed a lot of mercy, they were fighting on that day. So when everybody goes out to fight, what does everybody at home do? They get together and daven, if they're not fighting. So that's what the day of Tanis Esther was. And in fact, Rabbeinu Tam believes that that is the very source for Tanis Esther. If you look in all of the Megillah, and you look in later sources, there is no explicit source that says, fast on the 13th of Adar. And this is in stark contrast to the other fasts that we have during the year, like Tzom Gedaliah, the 3rd of Tishrei, Asar B'Tevis, Shavasar B'Tamos, Tisha B'Av. We have a pasuk in Sefer Zechariah that says very clearly that those 4 days need to be observed. But there is no verse that tells us outright that the day of the 13th of Adar should be observed as a fast day. So it was basically left to the Rishonim, to the early commentators, to try to extrapolate how it is that we know that we fast on the 13th. And Rabbeinu Tam says it comes from here, from this pasuk, Nikhalu ha-Yehudim me'oyvehem. The Jews got together in order to fight against their enemies. So if they were fighting, it must mean that everybody else was fasting and davening. And that's why we still fast nowadays in commemoration to that fast for the war. Okay, so says Rabbeinu Tam. Now, I have a question. What was the Rosh's question on Rashi? Rashi said, I can read the Megillah on the 13th of Adar because it was a time of war. The Rosh said, what does war have to do with reading the Megillah? That's the Rosh's question. Can we ask the same question on Rabbeinu Tam? What does the fact that they fasted on the 13th have to do with reading the Megillah? Why does it help that now we characterize the 13th as a fast? Oh, so now it makes total sense. I don't need a verse anymore to tell me that the 13th is a day on which I read the Megillah because it's a fast day. What does fasting have to do with reading the Megillah? Why can't I just repeat the Rosh's questions on Rabbeinu Tam? Anybody bothered by that? No? Seeing a lot of blank faces. I know it's been a long President's Day.
We seem to have, some of the sources seem to indicate that the fast is actually doing the same thing that like reading Megillah is. It's a happy fast. It's commemorating a good thing. So, like, if you're saying that you're fasting, you know you fast on the 13th.
Yeah.
It's another way you can commemorate. You actually just reading Megillah.
So you think that reading the Megillah would be a commemoration of the fact, like the original fast? According to Rabbeinu Tam, the fast is commemorating the original fast on the 13th, the day of the war. Right? Yeah.
In the Megillah, there's a fast, obviously, we're alluding to that. Preceded the victory, the Jewish people fasted.
That's what
Esther wedded.
Right.
And then.
Meaning the fast all the way back.
Right. That fast, led into Purim. So it's part of the story.
Well, hold on. Okay, so hold on. So Ariel's raising a little bit of a complication. If you look in the Megillah, there's actually multiple fasts. So one fast that Ariel's talking about happens in the fourth parak of the Megillah, where Esther says, "Vitzumu alai," right? And the Jews fast for 3 days while Esther goes to visit Ahasuerus. You know when those fasts happened? That's right, in Nisan. That's right. So it's difficult to say that our fast on Tanis Esther is a commemoration for a fast that they did in Nisan. Now, some say that it is. Some say that it is. And that the reason why we do it on the eve of Purim is because when else are we going to do it? We're going to do Tanis Esther, like right before Pesach? Like, that would be a joke, right? So when else are we going to do it? So we'll do it before. Okay. But still, it doesn't match so well, right? What we're saying right now is that, no, there is a second fast that happened at the end of the story, right before they fought the war, literally on the 13th of Adar. When they were fighting the war, there was a fast that happened, and we're saying that this is a what we do nowadays, commemoration to that. But my question is, the Gemara said we don't need anything to tell us that you could read the Megillah on the 13th in cases of necessity. You don't need any, you know that on your own. The question is, how do I know that on my own? So Rashi says, I know that because it was a day of victory, it was a miraculous day, we're celebrating the Nes. Okay, fine, I can understand that. The Rosh says, no, that's not a good reason to read the Megillah because we only read the Megillah when we rest, not when we fight. So says Rabbeinu Tam, oh, you know how I knew it on my own? Because we fasted. So what? What does that have to do with the Megillah? That's my question. We're going to return to it. Yeah, Todd.
My assumption when I read it was that what the Rosh meant was that, like, it says the Shlosh HaSeder is not Megillah at all, so it's a time when everyone's gathering together for Tanit Esther, and that's why you can read Megillah then, because everyone's together, so you can be Megillah with people in the village or whatever that's called.
Mm-hmm. So we're saying since everybody is together already, so then.
That's why they're allowed to say Megillah early, to be able to say.
Correct.
Together.
Right. Right. So Talia is saying that what Rabbi Nutam really has in mind is that, no, we're just trying to point out that this is a day when everybody gathers together. Since everybody's gathered together, so then that provides sufficient leniency to be able to read the Megillah on that day. But at the end of the day, the Rush's question would still stand, right? Meaning we need some explanation as to why I don't even need a Pasuk, right? Meaning the Pasuk was teaching me that on the 11th and the 12th, you could read it fundamentally. Right? But we need something to explain why the 13th is fundamentally eligible for the reading of the Megillah. It was a very good point, but I think the Rosh's question still stands. So let's take the journey together with me, and let's try to figure out this question. The truth is, if we back up for a moment, the fast of Tanis Esther is unique in many, many ways. Can anybody think off the bat of one way in which Tanis Esther is unique compared to other fasts? Yeah, Barry.
Shabbos, it's moved to Thursday.
Very good. So Barry points out that when Tanis Esther falls out on Shabbos, we move it up. We move it forward to Thursday. We don't move, or we push it earlier to Thursday. We don't delay it until Sunday. Is that true for any other fast? No. If Tisha B'Av falls out on Shabbos, do we do it on Thursday? No. We keep it until Sunday, right? Same thing with Shavuos V'Tammuz, 3 weeks earlier. So why is it that Tanis Esther, we push up on the calendar, but other fasts, we delay? Good. One unique feature of Tanis Esther. What? Anything else? So take a look at the Shulchan Aruch in source number 13. He's quoting from the Sefer Ho'aguda, or Paskening based on the Sefer Ho'aguda. The Aguda was Rabbi Alexander Zuslin HaKohen. He lived in Germany in the 1300s. He was killed by Kiddush Hashem. And the Aguda writes that on Tanis Esther, we are very lenient about people who don't easily fast. He says that on Tanis Esther, we're going to be lenient for all pregnant women, all nursing women, all birthing women. We're going to be lenient even for those who are koavei einayim, which means basically that you don't feel well. Your eyes don't, you know, your eyes hurt, right? Which basically means you have a headache. So we're going to be lenient for such people on Tanis Esther that they don't have to fast. And the Shulchan Aruch actually paskins this, or the Ramah, in source number 13. Take a look at 13, or Orechaim, Tafresh Pei Vav Sev Beis. The Shulchan Aruch says, Mis'anim b'yod gimel ba'adar. We fast on the 13th. However, comments the Rama, V'tan izeh eino chova. It's not a full-fledged obligation. Seemingly what the Rama has in mind is that it's a minhag. It's a custom. It's an age-old custom that we all keep. But nonetheless, it's an age-old custom. So l'chein yesh l'hakel bo le'is ha-tzorech. And therefore, we can be lenient about it when necessary. Kigon, mu'ubaros, menikos, olachola she'in bo sakana, va'afilu ra'koa ve'inayim. We go so far as to say that somebody who has a headache doesn't have to fast on Tanis Esther. We wouldn't say that about other fasts. We do say about other fasts that we're lenient about pregnant women fasting or nursing women fasting. That's actually a question about, like, why is this such a chiddush? Like, what's the difference between Tanis Esther and Shavuos or Betamos? So there are some who say that maybe when it comes to the other four fasts, if a pregnant woman can fast and it's not dangerous to her or to the fetus, and she's able to fast, then she should. Whereas on Tanis Esther, once you're pregnant, it's like game over. No way. We're like, it doesn't even pay to try. Meaning we're more lenient about Tanis Esther. Why are we more lenient about Tanis Esther than about the other four fasts? So here we have two unique features. Number one, that we push it earlier, we don't delay it. And number two, that we're more lenient about it. What does this all add up to? What does it reflect about Tanis Esther? So the truth is that the nature of Tanis Esther really differs at its core from the other fasts of the year. Tzom G'dayah, Shavuos or Betamos, Asar B'Teves, what do they all commemorate? The destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Beautiful, Shlomo. Right? They commemorate the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Tanis Esther, does that have anything to do with the Beis HaMikdash? No. Right? So what is it? What is this fast? Where does it even come from? They're not the Oraisa. Right. The only Oraisa fast is Yom Kippur. Yeah. And this is an amazing problem also with Tanis Esther, which is maybe we shouldn't even be able to do this fast. Maybe we should be prohibited from fasting on the 13th. Take a look at source number 4, Tosos HaMaseches Tanis. So Tosos says, V'im Tomar, if you'll say, Kevan to Omar Halacha K'Rab Yosi, once we hold like Rab Yosi, Heich Anu Mis'anin Lefnei HaPurim. How can we fast on the eve of Purim? What does Rabbi Yossi say? So let me give you 1 minute of introduction. There's something called Megillas Tanis. Who's heard of Megillas Tanis? Okay, so Megillas Tanis is basically a catalog of days in which we had that are us are either behesved, you can't give eulogies on them, or we don't fast on them. And they're because they're a whole variety of celebrations. Most of Megillas Tanis does not apply anymore nowadays, and that's why some of us here haven't heard of Megillas Tanis, because it almost has zero relevance. There are 2 days in Megillas Tanis that are listed as celebrations that still apply. What are those 2 days? 2 sets of time? Chanukah and Purim. Good. Now, there's a rule when it comes to Megillas Tanis, according to Rabbi Yossi, which is that any day in Megillas Tanis that's a day of celebration, you can't fast on the eve of that day. Okay? So hold on. Purim is in Megillas Tanis, right? Should I be allowed to fast on the eve of Purim according to that rule? No. When's Tanis Esther? The eve of Purim. So how can it be that I have a fast on Tanis Esther when it contradicts this principle of Megillas Tanis? That is the question of the Balei HaTosos here in source number 4 in Maseches Tanis. Tosos offers a couple of their own answers. They say maybe that true, the day of Purim itself was not nullified, but the rule that you can't fast before was nullified. Maybe that's correct. Or there's also other historical phenomena here, which is that the 13th actually, before it became Tanis Esther, maybe, but the 13th used to be itself a celebratory day. As opposed to a fast, it used to be a celebration called Yom Nikanor. It was a day on which we celebrated the death of a terrible Greek officer who caused Klal Yisrael a lot of tzaros. Okay, that's what it used to be. So Tosfos says, now that we don't celebrate that day anymore, so then it also doesn't follow the rule that you can't fast on it. Meaning, like, everything about it has been nullified. Okay. The key answer, The key to unlocking this mystery about Tanis Esther comes from source number 5 and a position of the Ravid. Says the Ravid in source number 5, Aval Ravid Zal, Kosav. The Yud Gimel Eino Dome L'Shar Ta'anios. The 13th of Adar is not similar to other fasts. The Zikaron Hu L'Neishen Asebo. It's a commemoration to the miracle that happened. Ve'od She'yesh Lanu Smach Ba'Kosuv. We have an allusion to this day in the Megillah itself. Sha'omar V'Cha'asher Ki'imu Anafsham Devrei Hatzomos V'Za'akosam. If you pay attention to the very end of the 9th parak of the Megillah, you'll see that these words appear, V'cha'asher ki'imu al-nafsham divrei hatzomos v'za'akosam. The way that the Ravid interprets that pasuk is that the Jewish people accepted upon themselves at the time of Mordechai and Esther, not only to celebrate the day of Purim, but also to fast in advance of Purim. The fast of Esther was part and parcel of the institution of the establishment of the celebration of Purim. It wasn't just the 14th. It wasn't just the party. It wasn't just the Suda and the Megillah and the Mishloach Manos and the Matanos Tavyonim. There was something else. And that was the day of the 13th, the fast that precedes the celebration. Shekeshem shekiblu aleim la'asos yom tov, just as the Jewish people accepted upon themselves to make the celebration, kach kiblu aleihem divrei hatzomos v'za'akasam, so too they accepted upon themselves to observe this fast day. Klomar, that's to say, la'asos tanis b'chol shana v'shana. They accepted upon themselves all the way back from Mordechai and Esther as part of this experience of Purim, not only to have the 14th, but to have the 13th. Purim and Tanis Esther. And the Rishonim, post the Ravid, give a little bit more oomph. They try to explain it a little bit more, what exactly this is trying to say. The Kolbo, Rab Aaron HaKohen of Narbonne, lived in the 1300s. He says that Tanis Esther is not a sad fast. It's a joyful fast. It's a fast that leads, that anticipates a celebration. It's the beginnings of a longer process of divine providence, where at the beginning things seemed very bleak and dark, and that at the end, the light showed. Says the Kolbo, V'hu Tanis Shel Simcha. My favorite line comes from the Sefer HaEshkol, Rab Avram ben Yitzchak of Narbonne. This was a topic that was studied in southern France. So he lived in the 1100s. And the Sefer HaEshkol writes, in the second half at the end of the first line, V'zecher la'oso tza'ar, in commemoration of the distress that the people experienced during the times of Mordechai and Esther, that's why they made this day, V'tiknu zehatanis, V'asimcha biyodalid, the joy that you have on the day of Purim, is ka'adam shayatza mitzara lirvacha. It's like a person who has gone, who's transitioned from a time of pain and distress to a time of breath and joy. That wholesome experience, that emotional roller coaster of feeling like you're about to lose your life, feeling like the end of Jewry is upon us, and then experiencing that salvation in the snap of a finger within 2 days, the 13th to the 14th, that's the experience of Purim. And that's why Tanis Esther is so essential to our experience of Purim. But at the same time, what it means is that this fast is not like any other fast. It's not a fast of destruction. It's a fast of joy. So now we can answer the two, we can explain the two unique features about the fast. Why do we push it up? Why don't we delay it? So the general reason why we delay fasts is what's called ikdume pur anusa lo mekadmina. When we have a day that commemorates a destruction, you don't want to bring that on earlier. We would rather avoid and procrastinate the destruction. You have Tisha B'Av, Shavuos, or B'Tammuz, terrible, sad days. You don't want to have that earlier. You delay it. But when it comes to Tanis Esther, says the Mordechai, it's not a sad day. It's a joyful fast in anticipation of a celebration, part of a longer, broader process. So it can come earlier. It can come on Thursday. It doesn't have to be delayed until Sunday. Why are we more lenient about the fast? Perhaps just because it's a minhag, or perhaps because it's not so critical. The fast itself is not the most critical part. It's that the fact that somebody is fasting is not the most critical part. You're fasting in order to get into the shoes, in order to get into the experience of the tzara that comes before the revacha. So based on this, we can explain a number of other very interesting features of Tanis Esther. The fact that it's a fast of joy. So first of all, let's say, I've seen this question arise a number of times. What if somebody gets married the week before Purim? And their Sheva Brachos coincides with Tanis Esther. Did anybody here have this? No? Okay. So I've seen this happen twice in the last couple of years. They get married before Purim. Sheva Brachos happen during the week of Purim. Do the Chasan and Kala have to fast on Tanis Esther? Generally, a Chasan and Kala, their 7 days of Sheva Brachos, are considered Shivas Yemei HaMishteh. It's like a personal Yom Tov, a personal celebration for both the Chasan and Kala. So maybe we should tell them not to fast. Or maybe they do have to fast because everybody else is fasting. This is a debate amongst the poskim, and all the way up to contemporary poskim, there's still not really a resolution about this question. You ask one Rav, he'll say one thing. You ask another Rav, he'll say the other. But Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, if you look at the Shari Tshuva in source number 17, he says that a chasan should not fast when his Sheva Brachos coincide with Tanis Esther. And Rav Willig paskins this way. And I spoke to Rav Willig about this last year, and he quoted to me my Rebbe, which means Rav Soloveitchik. And he said that Rav Soloveitchik, based on our approach that we've developed tonight, the Tanis Esther is a joyful fast, explained that it's not a contradiction for the Chasan and Kala not to fast on Tanis Esther. Generally, we tell a Chasan and Kala that they have to fast if, for example, it was Asara B'Tavis. They would have to fast Asara B'Tavis. Why? Because lo asi regel diyachid umivatel avelus derabi. What that means is that a personal joy cannot push aside and overcome a public display of mourning. The public's experience trumps the private. However, when it comes to Tanis Esther, it's not avelus derabi. It's not a mourning of the public because it's a joyful day. So there's no clash, there's no conflict between the Chasan and Kala having their joy of the Sheva Samei HaMishteh even while Tanis Esther is going on. So says Rav Soloveitchik. Others disagree. Rav Moshe Feinstein, I believe, was of the opinion that they should fast. But at the same time, this is another ramification or expression of the joy of this fast. So now let's bring it back to the question with which we began. The Rosh and Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam said, because the 13th is Tanis Esther, therefore it's fit for the reading of the Megillah. And we said, what does the Tanis have to do with the Megillah? Now we can understand. Because if the fast is part and parcel of the experience of Purim, so then I don't need a pasuk to teach me that I can read the Megillah at the very first stage of that process. In Hachinami, of course, the actual obligation is to read the Megillah on the day of celebration. But in pressing circumstances, such as the villagers of old, they could read the Megillah certainly on the 13th. Why? Because that's the first stage of the process of salvation, of going mitzara lirvacha. If this is the case, we can also understand why, at all costs, we try to keep the Megillah and Tanis Esther as adjacent as possible. There's a fascinating debate amongst the poskim about how to daven Mariv on the night of Tanis Esther going into Purim, following Tanis Esther going into Purim. Here's the debate. After Shmona Esrei, after we finish Shmona Esrei at Mariv, we say a Kaddish. Yisgadal v'yisgadash. Now we know that we have two different types of Kaddish in our davening. One is called a Chatzi Kaddish, where you don't say the second half of Tiskabel. And the other one is called a Kaddish Shalim, where you say Tiskabel as well. What type of Kaddish should we have between Shmona Esrei and the reading of the Megillah? That's the question. Machlokes haposkim. Some say that we say a Kaddish Shalim the end of davening. Then you're about to do a mitzvah, which is reading the Megillah. But whenever you end davening, you say a Kaddish Shalem. But the Levush, Rav Mordechai Yaffa, he said that no. You can't say a Kaddish Shalem. You know why? Because davening's not yet over. We haven't yet read the Megillah. Reading the Megillah, says the Levush, is part of davening Mariv after Tanis Esther. Why? Perhaps because we're trying to integrate the experiences of Tanis Esther and Purim as much as we possibly can. The tefillah that follows Tanis Esther should also include within it the reading of the Megillah. And the truth is, Talia reached out to me today about the relationship between the Megillah that's read at night and the Megillah that's read during the day. We don't have time to fully elaborate on that, but the Megillah at night may have a unique character because of its adjacency to Tanis Esther. Whenever we have a mitzvah that we have to do because of a certain day on the calendar, when do we do that mitzvah? Almost always we do it during the day. You have to shake a lulav. When do we do that? During the day. You have to blow the shofar. When do we do that? During the day. Okay, the Seder we're not talking about right now. Why do we read the Megillah twice? You read it during the day, I understand, because it's the day of Purim, so I should do the mitzvah that's associated with the day. So I should read the Megillah on the day of the 14th. Why am I reading it the night before? Why am I doing a mitzvah twice? So the Gemara in Megillah, Daf Daled Amud Alef, quotes Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, who extrapolates from a pasuk, Elokai ekra yomam velo sa'aneh, velayla velo dumi ali. Hashem, I will call out to you by day, and if I'm not answered, at night I won't be silent. Meaning I'm always going to call out to you, Hashem. And then there's another opinion. Rabbi Chelbo, in the name of Ula, Liman yezamercha chavod velo yidom, Hashem Elokai la'olam odeka. I will praise you, Hashem, and I won't be silent forever. I will praise you. Which means what? That the Megillah, from a certain perspective, has the traits of crying out to Hashem, a sense of tefillah, and also a sense of shevach, of thanking Hashem, of expressing gratitude for the salvation that we experienced. Those are the sources for the Megillah at night. The Megillah during the day comes from the Megillah itself. It tells us to read the Megillah on the 14th and the 15th. The Megillah at night comes from those psukim. Why? Because the Megillah at night, perhaps, really is more of an experiential reading. It's not a formal obligation to have a text that is read as an association with the day that you're celebrating. Right? The way that, you know, we have a certain reading on a certain day of the calendar in order to mark that day. That's the Megillah during the day. The Megillah at night is an expression of the experience of the person going from Tanis Esther into Purim. Reading the Megillah and saying, Hashem, I'm crying out to you because I am now on the heels of that sorrow, of that distress, of feeling like my life is on the line, and at the same time praising you and thanking you for the salvation that you provided. That's the Megillah at night on Purim. And perhaps that's why, according to the Levush, it has to be part of the context of tefillah. It has to be a chatzi kaddish, because the Megillah has to be integrated with Tanis Esther, with the whole holistic experience of going mitzara lirvacha. So what we saw tonight, we'll end here, although there's more to talk about. What we saw tonight is essentially that Tanis Esther is a unique type of fast. It's a joyful fast, and it's a fast that is the first stage of a longer process of the experience of Purim. Purim is not just the celebration, it's also the feeling of Hester Panim, the feeling like HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not watching, and then the recognition that he is. And that fast has many ramifications in the halacha. We saw in terms of its connection to Mikra Megillah that we try to integrate the Megillah together with Tanis Esther and with Tefillah as much as possible. We saw in terms of Ikdume Puranusa, Lo Mikadmina, that we push up the fast, we don't delay it. And according to some, I neglected to mention this, but there was a practice in the days of Rashi. Rashi doesn't like this practice, but there was a practice that when Tanis Esther, when Purim fell out on Sunday, so Tanis Esther couldn't be on Shabbos, so they pushed it up to Thursday. That's what we do. There was a practice that fasted not only on Thursday, but also on Friday. Why? Maybe it's this idea that you always want Tanis Esther as close as possible to the experience of Purim, because we can't divide between the two. As the Ravid says, the Jewish people accepted upon themselves not only the celebration, but also the fast, because they wanted that holistic experience of going mitzara lirvacha. And that explains also why our joy on Purim is so deep, why our joy goes to such great lengths, because we're not just diving straight into the joy. When you have a whole process, when you've relived and reenacted everything that it took to get to that place of joy, so then that simcha is so much greater when you feel the tzara before you get to the rivacha. That's Tanis Esther, and that's Purim as well. Wish everybody a good night. Yeah.
So you kind of get this linkage between Tanis Esther and Purim. What do you think about Shushan Purim? So like what falls on the 15th, obviously. Tanis Esther isn't on the 14th, it's on the 13th.
Right. Right. So I think, Shushan Purim, there's a longer discussion also about what is the relationship between the 14th and the 15th, even for those who celebrate the 15th, right? Meaning the days of Purim are the 14th and the 15th. So you still have Tanis Esther as close as possible to the days of Purim, even if in your specific scenario, it's not the day in which you're reading the Megillah or celebrating the day. But the 14th is not without relevance and consequence, even for the people who celebrate the 15th. Yeah. Okay, Ashikar Achitan. Have a good night, everybody.